from WCVB Channel 5 Podcasts and SportsCenter 5. It's Take 5 with Chris Gasper.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of the Take 5 Podcast. Today's guest, one of my good friends and a fellow North Shore native, Steve Beaupet. He's the longest tenured beat writer for the Celtics, covering the team for more than 3.5 decades. He's also one of the funniest guys I know and a great storyteller. We really covered a lot of ground here with Steve. On the Celtics side, he's preaching ball movement. He tells us why ball movement is a barometer for the Celtics and the fact that they need to heed that message of moving the ball from Brad Stevens. Also, Steve tells us why some other general managers are wary of making a deal here with Danny Ainge. He also has a fantastic story about Larry Bird. Larry Bird, not only a three-point shooter, but a debt collector. This story, you're going to want to hear that. And Ellen, we also asked him a little bit about the muted NBA All-Star Weekend, which I feel like really struck a chord with you.
It was the All-Star Night, and it did strike a chord with me because it wasn't fun. It wasn't very exciting. The players didn't want to be there, and we went from the NBA being the most responsible team when it came to COVID to just completely irresponsible and wanting to get the money from All-Star Weekend.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, but I would say this. So, yes, you're right. The NBA was the most responsible league. I didn't feel like they should have held an All-Star game, but they did in Atlanta. But let me ask you this. You watch a lot of these Bravo shows. How is it that these Bravo shows can still do in-person reunions in the middle of a pandemic? That seems pretty irresponsible.
I'm very happy you asked me about that because they have a serious testing regimen.
So does the NBA. They tested everyone.
They're all 6 feet apart the entire time. Can't get up without a mask on. Can only have one guest. And they do not have breaks for makeup. So
you might be 6 feet apart, but you're also screaming at each other, expelling droplets for like how long? I mean, first of all, some of these reunions, they break them into three parts. So they're literally sitting there.
They're sitting there for about 15 hours.
Yeah, 15 hours screaming at each other, expelling droplets.
We need it. Okay.
Well, some of us need the NBA. That's my point to you.
I'm just saying, I don't think the players themselves needed that All-Star weekend. And the dunk contest, I remember back in the day when it was, this is what I wanted to watch, like because it was like WWE, there were skits. Yeah. Like there was art put into this. They would bring in little kids. They would bring in choruses. They would bring in, you know, the players were on the side, like getting everyone amped up.
Yep.
And this was just like, oh, we'll just like dunk a few basketballs.
Like, yeah, so to use, like, again, another Real Housewives analogy, and I'm not just using it because it's you, because I watch these shows too, I'm not going to lie, but this was, to me, was kind of like the Real Housewives of DC version of the dunk contest.
I would say the Real Housewives of DC was far more entertaining than this dunk contest.
Well, you might have been right.
Yeah.
You might have been right. But hopefully you will find our conversation with Steve Beaupet far more entertaining than that boring dunk contest as well. Steve's next.
Hey, Boston, let's talk sports. WCVB Sports Center 5, The Contact.
Source at MLB tells me.
Expert analysis.
That's going to be a major point of contention.
On air.
I talked to a high-ranking source.
And exclusive articles free on the WCVB app. Duke Castiglione, Chris Gasper, Bob Halloran, and special correspondent Mike
Once
Lynch.
Again,
the strongest team covering Boston's teams.
The only game in town.
WCVB Sports Center 5.
All right, as promised, we're now joined by Steve Beaupet. Longtime NBA writer, the dean of NBA writers, been doing it for more than 3.5 decades. Steve, thanks for joining us here on the Take 5 Podcast.
Good to speak with you, Christos.
Oh, yeah, always a pleasure. We share a Greek background. You know, both of us have Greek blood. Obviously, I'm half Greek, and you are as well, right?
Pretty much all Greek, yeah.
Oh, okay, 100%, yeah.
See, a couple of Greek boys from West Lynn chat.
That's right. That's what we're going to do here. A couple of North Shore kids chatting about basketball. I'll tell you, Steve's a much better basketball player than I ever was. We'll get to that a little bit later, some of his basketball exploits with another media member that you guys would be familiar with. I want to start here with the Celtics, Steve. 19-17 here at the break. It's been a little bit of a bumpy ride in terms of how they got here. How would you assess their first half? Have they lived up to your expectations, exceeded them? Or have they underwhelmed in terms of what they did in the first half?
Well, while recognizing that there have been issues with injuries and, you know, guys coming back and Jason Tatum with the COVID thing, I'd say they pretty strongly underachieved. I think that they should be, you know, a few games better than where they are now, at least. But in the long run, if they get their stuff together, it's not going to mean a heck of a lot of difference. So there's still time to steer out of the skid. You know, the four wins leading up to All-Star were nice. You can quibble about the quality of them considering the situations with some of the opposition.
Yeah, it helped. No, but Kawhi Leonard definitely helped. And then the COVID-ravaged Raptors, that worked out pretty well, too.
Yeah, I think they showed up without, you know, I'm not sure if the – I think the ball boy got into the game for the Raptors.
It felt that way.
And actually scored 7 points, so they probably shouldn't knock him too much.
You know, you talk to a lot of people around the league. You've covered it for so long. You're so well connected. Can you give me a sense of what the impression is of the Celtics around the rest of the league when you talk to people?
Very talented, but I think there's a bit of curiosity of what's going on. You know, a couple of years ago when the Celtics lost in 2018, Game 7 at home against the Cavaliers, the Warriors were really hoping the Cavaliers would win that game. They didn't want to face Boston. And we got a lot of the same players in or pieces in order there. I think teams are concerned about the Celtics' ability to having a bunch of athletic guys who can switch on picks and stuff like that and defend. But so far, I mean, it's hard to look at what's been going on and see that the breakdowns that they've had.
What's interesting to me and sort of astonishing to me is that your two best players, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, have both had phenomenal seasons. Tatum, 24.9 points per game. Brown, 24.7. Brown has taken a huge leap, made his first All-Star game. Both those guys playing in the All-Star game on opposite teams on Sunday night. But it just doesn't feel like their individual success has necessarily translated to team success as much as it should have. Is that a reflection on them as young guys trying to learn how to balance getting theirs sort of in NBA parlance and making the guys around them better? Or is that really more an indictment of the roster that Danny Ainge has built and they just don't have enough help?
You can move the basketball. I mean, and when we say move the basketball, it's not just passing, it's cutting as well. There's no reason why this team shouldn't be doing that all the time. And what's hard to fathom is the players themselves not getting it, not realizing that, hey, if I pass and cut, it's better off for me. I'll be able to finish more and I won't have to dribble through three guys to score. And it just, there are so many benefits to that. You make the defense work. And think about this. If you're a guy whose job is to go to the corner and spread the floor and catch and shoot, if you haven't seen them, if you haven't touched the ball in four or five trips, or barely touched it, are you going to be ready and in rhythm when the ball comes to you to get your shot? You look at how the Utah Jazz move the ball and cut and all those things and the wide open shots they get. There are so many benefits to come from that I'm stunned every time the Celtics get caught up in hero ball. And it's not always that, hey, I'm being a jerk, I want mine. It's like things are going bad, I'll take the ball, I'll take responsibility, I'll go make a play. In theory, it sounds like you're being gallant and stepping up and doing the right thing. In practice, you're killing it. You're killing the team.
Yeah, I think it's been a tough balance there. You know, it's interesting when you look at the really great stars in this league, they have a feel for the game. You know, it's almost like being able to play a piece of music. You just have like a timing and they're able to know when they have to take over and when they should take a step back to make sure the other guys are involved. And so that, you know, to continue with the music analogy, it's sort of a symphony, right? And you need all of the instruments, you know, in harmony. And yes, you might be the cellist and you might be the most talented person, but if you're just playing the solo the whole time, then it's not going to be as good. And I think the best players are able to know that. And when I look at Tatum and Brown, I feel like they're just constantly in attack mode, which to your point is good. You know, they're trying to take responsibility, but if they could sort of be more measured and say, you know what? Okay, this first quarter, let me make sure that I get Jeff Teague going when he comes in the game off the bench. You know, let me make sure Shemi's starting because Marcus Smart's out. Let me make sure I build some confidence for him. And I feel like they just haven't figured out how to play that yet. The rhythm to being a superstar and making the guys around you better and then figuring out when it's time to take over.
Well, I first of all, I will say that the cello solo on Stairway to Heaven is highly underrated. But, you know, it's not just like saying consciously, I'm going to get so-and-so involved. I think that's the wrong way to go about it, too.
Sure.
I think it's more just make the play that's in front of you. Keep it moving. Unless you've got a wide open look in rhythm, keep it moving. Cut. The ball will come back to you. The ball will find energy. Give the defense the opportunity to screw up.
I do want to ask you this, because we're talking about this a lot, and the Celtics at the break are 23rd in the NBA in passes per game. And you and I both know that's not the way Brad Stevens wants to play. And you've, I think, spoken very eloquently about why he would prefer to play in a way where the ball pops and moves more. Brad Stevens has gotten some heat, maybe more heat than he's ever gotten. Do you think that Brad Stevens is somehow responsible here, culpable for this team not getting that message, for them not executing the way he wants them to? Is his message being tuned out or getting stale?
If you've got a coach that knows what he's doing, that's coaching for the players, not for himself, and you've seen coaches that make moves to make themselves look good, you've seen GMs do that a lot. But if you've got a coach that knows what he's doing, that doesn't wear on the players. Bill Fitch knew what he was doing, but he wore on the players. It was time for Bill Fitch to go. You've got a coach in Stevens who clearly knows the game. He's not telling them to play ISO ball. And he's also a coach where when the players make mistakes, he's not, you know, looking for the bus out of Central Square and Lynn going into Boston to throw them under it, right? You know, he's a guy that wears well with a team, and let's, you know, for those who want him to be up and screaming and all that, public Brad is not private Brad. You know, players have told me that over the years. He will get on people in the right situations, but he's not a guy that is a guy that wears poorly on a team over the long haul. So now you've got, this is your coach. And he's telling guys to do the right thing. And the players know it's the right thing, not only for the team winning, but also for their own good, because they're going to get layups instead of having to, you know, go through 10 people. So in that situation, is the problem, should you be looking at the coach or should you be looking at the players?
Oh, definitely the players. But Steve, we all know the NBA, you know, it's much easier to get on the coach or replace the coach. And I'm not saying that. I'm not saying they should replace the coach. Right. But it's much easier to do that than to change the players. I mean, the players have the power in that league.
But I think that's the slope you don't want to get caught on. Because if you're going to let the players get away with that, say, well, I'll blame it on the coach, then are they ever going to be the kind of people that you're going to want in those situations? You know what I mean? It's like, you know, if you're going to get rid of a guy, if you're going to get rid of a coach that is, you know, treats you properly as a human being, as an adult, you know, and gives you the right information, puts you in positions to succeed, if you're going to blow him off, you might be the problem.
Here's another thing about Brad I wanted to ask you. Do you think the perception that Brad has difficulty dealing with sort of the superstar NBA ego is unfair? You know, people go back to Rondo when he was here, obviously Kyrie Irving, and now Tatum and Brown. There's sort of a perception maybe in some circles that he has a more difficult time reaching that player than he does, say, the Jay Crowder or the Evan Turner or the Avery Bradley or even the IT. But is that unfair to paint Brad that way?
So you're saying, like, you know, a guy like a Doc Rivers might be better in that situation?
Yeah, or, you know, obviously Phil Jackson back in the day.
Except Doc Rivers goes to the Clippers and has all those stars together, and that never doesn't work, right? And when Doc Rivers was here, he's in a practice, and it was my story, but they're in practice one day during the playoffs, and Doc gets on Rajon Rondo, who throws a water bottle at the video screen and cracks and breaks the TV. You know, you can look at any coach and it's like, Brad doesn't call timeouts quickly enough, you know, or something like that. I've heard that occasionally. Well, there was this coach in the league that when his team would be screwing up, And the assistant coach, who was a friend of mine, would turn to that head coach and say, should we call a timeout? And the coach would say, no, they got themselves into this. Let them get themselves out of it. So if you would get rid of that coach, you just fired Phil Jackson. Okay. I mean, so, you know, I don't know. Greg Popovich, I love him as a guy. I love him as a coach. But think about him. If Tim Duncan doesn't allow a young Greg Popovich to yell at him in front of the team and stuff like that, have we ever even heard of Greg Popovich by now? He would have been fired. If Tim Duncan says, I ain't letting you talk to me that way, then Greg Popovich is back at, Pomona Pitzer, you know. That's just how it works. So, again, if you get a guy that you know you can trust and who wears well over the long haul, and clearly Brad has got that ability that he's going to wear well. He's not going to grind guys down emotionally, physically, whatever. Then, again, you got to look at the makeup of your team and the makeup of your guys and say, is this something they're going to grow out of? And that's where you've got to make your decision.
Speaking of makeup and the makeup of a team, you know Danny Ainge really well. You covered him when he was a player. Danny is an aggressive guy. What do you think he's going to do here to improve this team as we come up on the trade deadline? Or do you think it's more what they've said publicly in recent weeks? Owner Wick Rausbeck going on 98.5 and Danny as well in his weekly appearance, sort of indicating that it might be more likely they use that TPE for $28.5 million in the offseason.
I think it depends entirely on what's available and at what price. I mean, that's always the case. You can sit here and we could make a list of five guys who would be fantastic in a Celtics uniform. It would really help this team, you know. But are they available? Are their teams making them available? And would they fit in context here? I mean, there's talk about from Detroit, Jeremy Grant.
Jeremy Grant, yes.
Talented player. Would it fit here where he's not the guy? You know what I mean? Is he going to be able to play in that role? It's hard to find guys who can fit the context you need them to fit. It's not baseball where you plug a guy in and he's going to do what he does. Here it's usage rate and all those things. I mean, Gordon Hayward was in a strange situation here because his situation kept changing from a couple of months after he signed, like all the way through, right? He was always in a difficult spot. And people were saying, well, he ain't worth the money. His numbers are terrible. But when you look at what he did last year, his numbers vis-a-vis his usage rate, he had a fantastic season. Plus, he was a guy that you could count on to keep the ball moving. You have to be able to look at a guy and say, okay, here's what he's doing in this situation. What would he do in your situation?
Yeah, that completely makes sense. I want to run something by you because, again, you're so well-connected and you talk to people in the rest of the league. And here was something that was in an ESPN story from Tim Bonteps talking about Danny Ainge. And the last time Danny made a deal in season was 6 years ago when he got Isaiah Thomas from Phoenix, a fantastic deal. Only the San Antonio Spurs have a longer drought of not doing an in-season deal. So in this Tim Bontemps story, he quotes a West executive as saying, of Ainge and the Celtics, they'll only do something if they think they're going to bury you. Is there any perception around the NBA that you've encountered where people feel like when it comes to dealing with Danny, it's maybe tougher than other GMs that he wants to, quote unquote, win the trade?
I think people are wary about Ainge, definitely. And I know that to be a fact because I talked to those guys. And Danny has the image that he's never shaken. People still think he bit Tree Rollins. And then once they find out the tree bit Danny, they say, yeah, good. So there's that. But, you know, look, trade situations, people may be wary, but teams are always going to do things that are good for them as well. So if they see something, they may think twice about it with Ainge. Sure.
In terms of Gordon Hayward, how do you feel about that? I mean, there was a deal to be made there with Indiana. Maybe they didn't like the players. I don't know, Miles Turner, that contract, whatever. But you could have gotten some usable NBA bodies back. Now they're in a situation they do have the TPE. but the roster has lacked some consistency and depth all year long.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure if the Indiana deal would have been there. To figure that part out, we got to go to the minute by minute on the timing of that. There was a point where Gordon wanted Indiana, and they were talking back and forth on a deal. But then, you know, I'm not sure exactly when Charlotte showed up with, you know, the bushels full of cash. And, you know, I'm sure that would have swayed his mind as well.
Did you take any issue or have any issue with Jaylen Brown, who has this knee tendonitis issue that the team has said is going to be an issue for him all year long in terms of it could flare up at any time? And he did have to miss one of the final four games before the break against the Washington Wizards. Do you have any issue with him playing 26 minutes in the All-Star game and competing in the three-point shootout?
I checked my walls, and I do not see a medical degree. I don't know. I'm not in the room with them to know what degree it is. And then you have to ask yourself, it was one day during this break. Would he be doing anything physically anyway? Would he be, you know, going? So what he did yesterday, last night, may have been less, perhaps significantly less, than the workout he would have gone through back here or wherever he was. I know last year the Celtics sent medical people with Kemba to Chicago. I'm not sure if that was the case this year. I kind of assume it was, but I don't know for sure. I can't say. I don't have an issue because I don't know the degree to which Jaylen's having that problem. So, you know, I can't say for certain.
You mentioned Kemba there. Obviously, he went last year and afterwards his knee kind of flared up. And that was a situation where he ends up not being able to start the season. They have the strengthening of the knee, the stem cell stuff. I kind of think Kemba is the key to the team, Steve. When he plays well, they're a different team. It's suddenly they have that hierarchy of stars. They have the three stars you need to be a real contender. And in the last four games before the break, he was great, averaging 23 points per game, shooting 44% from the field and 43% from three. Overall, in 20 games he's played this year, and he's not playing in these back-to-backs. We know that as the Celtics manage him with the knee. Overall, he's only shooting 38% from the field and 36% from three. So I feel like if the Celtics get the Kemba they got the last four games of the first half, this is going to look like a different team in the second half. Certainly not a 19-17 team. To me, he's the key.
I wouldn't disagree, but you look at what he does, what he's been able to do these last few games, and you know, no one does anything in a vacuum. He's getting looks because guys have to be concerned about Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. You know, let's go back to, you know, the Bird, you know, Celtics.
Yes, please do.
Larry Bird got an extra half a beat of space because teams had to be concerned about Kevin McHale and other people in the low post. Kevin McHale got like an extra half second to make his move because he wasn't, you know, the double team wasn't coming as fast because you can't leave Bird, you know, so those things should play in again. So now we go back to the, you know, I'm sounding like every one of my old coaches, ball movement and cutting, right? That's where life is. And if that happens, you're going to have open guys. And if it's a Kemba Walker on this possession or a Jason Tatum or a Jaylen Brown with a wide open squared up look from the corner of three, you know, life is beautiful that way. That's how things work.
I agree. You know, I do think it really opens up the offense when Kemp is out there and can make shots, and he's capable of doing that.
So I want to go back to the All-Star game for 1 second. What are your thoughts on the dunk competition?
Does it need to die? Because, I mean, that was, I mean, I think most people didn't even know the names of the players, Steve. I mean, I picked Anthony Simons.
Hey.
And he did it.
Obadiah Toppin. Man had a great education, okay?
Yes, I know. He's a Dayton grad like you.
University of Dayton, okay?
Yes, I understand. You know. Yes, he's a Dayton grad like you. But, I mean,
I'm not sure if you graduated. You came out early. But
yes.
You will graduate,
he's a,
I'm sure.
He's a Dayton. Well, I mean, you know, to be honest, I mean, are we sure you graduated?
You know?
I don't see any papers on the wall.
I mean, there's, yeah, we in your background here, I don't see the diploma.
I'm not a huge dunk contest guy. Pierce has the idea, and I've heard it elsewhere as well, that, you know, bring out the trampolines and the dunk guys and let's have a show. my greater concern with the dunk contest, first of all, it's not going to go away because it's sponsored and all those things, and it is about the money. My greater concern would be that all of a sudden you've got an important player in this, and he goes up and he hits his head on the rim or comes down awkwardly, does an ACL, and screws himself up. And then it's like, you know, there's going to be hell to pay. In baseball, the home run hitting contest is going to screw up the guys for a few weeks afterwards, maybe. It wouldn't kill me to see that go as well.
So I feel like back in the day, the dunk contest used to be more of like a WWE style entertainment of just like who could be the most outrageous and do the dumbest thing, do the most, bring out a choir, you know, jump over IKEA, bite down a teddy bear from the hoop. There's just no originality anymore. And that's why, I mean, I'm out.
They've all been done.
Yeah, well,
like, physics has intervened in the dunk contest. Like, we've reached the limit, people. Like, what dunks can be done now that haven't been done?
Well, you may have reached physical limits, but then, you've got to bring in Star Wars characters and stuff like that. I mean, you know, are we going to see a drone in a dunk contest, you know?
I would love to see that.
Yeah, I'd love to
see that. I think that's a great idea.
Like a drone dropping the ball, that would be. I also think, though, honestly, like, you just need bigger names. Like, I think if you had Zion Williamson in that dunk contest, if you had a Jaylen Brown, even if they're doing the same dunks that Anthony Simons, Obi Toppin of Dayton fame, and Cassius Stanley from the G League and Duke fame were doing, I think people would get more excited. Like, part of it back in the day was you had some of the stars of the league, you know, Michael Jordan, Dominique Wilkins was in it. You had guys, Sean Kemp in his heyday was in it. Dwight Howard was in it. Vince Carter. You had some real star power in the thing, and now you kind of don't.
Yeah, now it's just sad.
Yeah, but I mean, but it's all, the other part that screwed up with that is it's so subjective. I'm sorry, but I'm fighting this. Because the guy blows a kiss at the rim, okay, it was a socially distanced kiss. So, you know, how does that beat Obi in the final?
I couldn't agree more. No. I needed those lips to touch the hoop for it to count.
Yeah.
I don't care if he loses his team.
I think Simons just had the most hops, and the judge respected that. The judges respected the hops, man.
4 out of 5 dentists would have been hoping he did the kiss, too.
Oh, 100%.
It would have been like, you know, would have been chiclets on the floor.
Oh, totally. Know? Yeah. And he pulled away at the last second. We can't have you on and not have you tell some great stories here. So I want to sort of, you know, delve into, I'll just start here with this. Obviously, this is a different season for you at this point. It's probably the first season, in 35, 36 years that you're not covering the team full time. What has it been like for you?
Let's say I was laid off due to COVID.
Oh, yes. No, like a lot of people in this pandemic, unfortunately, Steve, you were a victim of the economy and circumstances. But what has it been like for you just not covering you know, the NBA, not being on a plane, not eating the room service, not being part of that NBA life you were part of for more than 3 decades.
It doesn't feel all that like strange that I'm missing out because it's not a regular year anyway. You know what I mean? It wouldn't be like covering a regular season. And the thing that allows you to do the job properly, you're prevented from doing, which is pulling guys aside, talking to people. I'm still keeping up with guys, you know, on texting and phone just because you get to know people over the years. But it's odd. It's strange to be healthy for a change. So I used to always get my physical during season. I'd go into Mass General and my primary care guy was never really happy with Greek boy here. Anyway, one year I had to cancel an appointment because I don't know, it was trade deadline or something. And I didn't go back until the summer when I have a chance to get healthier. He did a double take when I walked in and we did the blood work afterwards. And he called me a day later and said, look, I need you to come in. Nothing's wrong. But I just need you to come in. I walk into his office at MGH and holds up 2 sheets of paper. He said, these are your numbers in season. And this is you in the off season. He goes, these are 2 different people. We need to think about this. So he's wanted me off the beat worse than the readers did.
The readers did not want you off. That's funny.
So, but it was, you know, more so, but over the years since then, I started having physicals twice a year. You know, being able to take care of yourself is it's doable. I can't blame the NBA entirely, you know, for my own stupidity and I'm not being able to avoid the cookies when I walked into the press room.
Well, that late night room service, man, will get you. Eating after like midnight will kill you.
Yeah, well, just eating, you know, the stuff you eat on the road is, it's been a blessing in a lot of ways.
You were saying before we started recording, though, that you were talking to an NBA referee friend of yours, and you guys sort of came to a conclusion.
Yeah, we figured that the NBA is a pre-existing condition, or it's a comorbidity. And I'm not saying this job is heavy lifting. I've had more difficult jobs. I've worked at Westland Creamery midnight to 8 during the summer. Oof. On a lobster boat. You know, every job's got good parts and bad parts, right?
Definitely.
I mean, I was telling people that lobster boat, you get out early in the morning. It was a summertime job. And you're in by like noontime and you get paid well and it's nice. That's good stuff. But the bad part is if you're out in the water and a squall hits, you could die. And that kind of, that can affect your career. I'm not making it out to be like this terrible job, but it's more than people see. You're on the phone all the time talking to GMs, agents, with a 24-hour news cycle, you have to get stuff posted right away. So it's a different world.
So I can imagine covering that NBA for 35 years, you have plenty of stories, but I heard that you have some priceless Larry Bird stories. What is your best Larry Bird story?
Larry's competitiveness. The first three-point contest was in 86 in Dallas. And, you know, this was a big deal. There's a lot of talk about this around the league, right? Three-point contest. It's the first time. This is crazy. Larry bet everybody on the team. They were, no, you're not going to win. And the guys were always doing these little $5 whatever things. It wasn't the big money now. But that was the thing is, you know, and Larry's like, I'm going to win this thing. Come on. I'll take everybody else now. I'm going to win this. He wins the three-point contest in Dallas. That's a Sunday. The next game, always the post-All-Star, was the West Coast trip because it'd be like an ice show at the Garden. We fly to Sacramento, and they're staying at one of those Red Lion Inns, not the up the vertical hotel type, the one that had like the tentacles.
Oh, wow.
With these, like, you know, and so it was like you could walk a mile to your room. So the team, the tradition was, or, you know, the process was the team would gather that day. And this is back when they were flying commercial anyway.
Yeah, so, and you were flying with them, right?
Yeah.
And be on the same flight.
But yeah, so Larry, the team gathers and they're going to get on the bus to go to practice that Monday night. Okay, they got their sweats on and all that. And Larry is standing there by the door of the hotel door of the bus right there. And he has one of those like dime store memo books, and he'd written down what everyone had bet him.
That's phenomenal.
Okay. And he's like, come on, get your money up. I got it ready. I'm the 3-point king. You said I wasn't going to be the 3-point king, but I'm the 3-point king. Larry, my money's back in the room. Go get it. Go get it. They're going to wait for me. Larry, my room's like a mile away. Hey, you said I wasn't going to win. I won. Go get the money. Larry, the bus ain't going to leave without me. I'm the 3-point king. They'll wait for you. I mean, he just like, he's there checking people off. And it was like, you know, so I'm not sure, you know, I'm sure that the money meant was amounted to nothing. But, you know, that was Larry. I mean, and he had to beat you. He had to win. You know, again, that's what makes him, what made him Larry Bird, I think, in a lot of ways.
That's amazing.
That's a great story.
He sounds like something.
It.
Yeah.
He loved it. It might have been that year or the year afterward. But the tradition again was the Sunday after All-Star, they play the Lakers in L.A. Mm-hmm. Afternoon game, national TV. It was nothing bigger back then. Bird, Magic, you know, Kareem, all this stuff. And before the game, in the forum, in the locker room, Walton is walking around like, you know, like pounding his fist, like talking to no one. Big game today, big game, big game. And I look over at Larry. And he's there lacing his sneakers and he's in his own world. And he's just there saying, he's kind of in this sing-song voice, we're playing the Lakers, we're playing the Lakers. It's like, he's a kid and he's loving this.
Wow.
And he's, and you know, the national TV, the pressure, this, the opponent. No, Larry's, Larry's playing the Lakers. This is cool.
Wow. I want to ask you about what was it like covering that rivalry, Celtics-Lakers in the 80s? And did you realize at the time that you were covering hoops history? Or are you just so immersed in it that you don't even think that way?
You knew something was going on here. Because, that was the big story then. The Bird Magic thing, what they did to help save the NBA. When I look back, what strikes me is how much different things were. And Pat Riley is one of the guys that started changing the NBA and how things done. But it was very much a mom and pop thing back then. You know, Celtics, they would practice at Helena College, where we used to play Goya games. Chris knows what I'm talking about.
I do know what you're talking about. The audience might not know.
Well, it's like the Greek version of CYO.
Yeah, that's actually, you know what? That's a great way. Yes, that's what it is. But, you know,
Greek Orthodox Youth Association.
Yes, yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's a really good way, I think, of putting it. Yes, so the Greek version of CYO.
It's like, okay, they practice this place called Helena College. You go down here. I know how to get to Helena College. it was special, you know, you'd go to practice and you'd sit there at the start of practice. You'd watch the whole practice. Nothing was like a secret. You know what I mean? You'd go to Lakers practices, and that's where I realized Pat Riley gets a lot of credit and all this here. But when you're at a Lakers practice, and again, it's only a few of us sitting in the stands at the Forum watching this. But Pat Riley says, "Okay, let's move on to this." And Magic John says, "Hey, no, let's run that one again." When you got your best player doing that, and you're the coach, life is good. So, it was a lot calmer time. Bird's talk. I've talked to him a bunch about it, how he wishes the team, he could make his teams go commercial for a couple of trips a year just to kind of see what it's like and to appreciate. But I think it made things better with media as well, because, you know, we didn't just drop in from outer space and write stuff about you, you know. You'd be at the airport in the morning after a road game, and you'd be dragging and they'd be dragging, and you'd realize, hey, you know, we're all a bunch of working schlubs, you know, in vastly different tax brackets. But, you know, there was more of a sense of that.
More sense.
I was there the day that Shaughnessy informed the Celtics that he was leaving the beat. We were at an airport. Bird said that he was going to be leaving. He was told he was going to leave in a couple of weeks, and Bird said he'd pay his way if he left now. And I laughed about this. I remember talking to Parrish, and Parrish just kind of had this weird smile on his face, said, "Won't be the same."
I want to ask you, that's interesting. That's such a great story. You mentioned traveling with the guys, and that's obviously a different element of it. Did you ever have a guy on a bus or a flight approach you about something you wrote, you know, being unhappy about something you wrote?
I had an issue with Bird one time because of a headline. And what was funny is he was pissed. It was my rule is if I write something bad about you, even if I was off that next day, I go to practice anyway. And I was off, but I went, and he was pissed about, I think the story as well, but, the headline was just awful. So, you know, afterwards I kind of said, look, he was kind of brushing off. I said, no, let's talk about this. We were in the parking lot by the gym there, and we kind of talked it out, and he was better to me afterwards than he was before. I mean, we just, you know, and I think that even in the case of, you know, the stuff that they would, you know, abuse that they would give Shaughnessy or whatever, they all respected Dan. I mean, even Larry, you know, not even Larry, Larry definitely did. Cause I mean, there was that, you know what I mean? But there was some of the antagonism. Bird would tell me that he was upset when he was running the Pacers, was that the writers there wouldn't get on the team. He says, heck, you guys would get on us every couple of weeks, even if we didn't deserve it. You know,
that's interesting.
And, he kind of wished that there was more accountability. I think that's what he thought in Indiana than there was.
A couple more here before we let you go, Steve. This has been,
can I sneak in one thing? Yeah. That's going to, Mike Lynch, right?
Yeah.
Okay. You know how I'm sure Mike lets you know how good he was back when he played and stuff like that?
Well, he lets me know how good he was as an official.
Well, I got bad news for you guys.
Oh, no.
Michael, as a player, as good as he tells me he was, he was actually better.
As good as Mike Lynch was, and you're breaking this down and telling us, you know, how great he was, and obviously Mike was great, but Mike never played on an intramural team that won a championship that also featured Dan Patrick.
No, he didn't, because he was playing, Mike was playing varsity.
What was that like, winning that championship? What was Dan Patrick like as a player? And did you two guys have any idea of what was ahead of you guys in terms of great media careers at that point?
As a player, Dan was really, really good. Could shoot the lights out. I mean, you know, he was the best player on our team. Not real fond of passing. I used to say that Dan had a 3-to-2 assist ratio, years to assist. But the guy could play, you know, really good player. The funny part was, and this is where, you know, it gets a little bit like Twilight Zone. He was a big Bill Walton freak, loved Bill Walton. So the name of our intramural team, he named it the Walton Gang. And okay, senior year, we win the intramural championship. And then a few years later, Dan's working for CNN, working sports at CNN, and I'm working at the Herald, and we're on the court before a finals game, Lakers Celtics, and we're about to cover a game that Bill Walton's playing in, and it's like, ooh, this is, yeah,
that's amazing.
Just kinda, you know, like we couldn't have pictured it back then.
How did you end up on that team? Like, were you friendly with him in college at Dayton? Or, you know, how did you end up on that team that was so good? Were you guys just part of a friend group? Or was it kind of a, team of ringers, you know?
Yeah, no, not so much. I mean, you know, I knew Dan. He was actually, he was a DJ at the campus radio station, which they ended up, the school ended up selling it because they wanted to build some building. But it was like in the Dayton area, it was one of the big FM stations. It was, you know, among like one of the top one or two stations in the area, a rock and roll station. A lot of people that that worked for that station went on to have incredible careers because they were doing professional work. But I used to be able to call Dan up at, you know, whatever time and request songs. So that was cool. It was just a bunch of guys who would always be playing basketball. And it's like, when it came time to put intramural teams together, that's kind of what we did. And I wound up with his group. And then Dan went on to CNN and all that stuff. And he was still doing like radio things afterwards, even when he was at CNN. Then he, of course, on to ESPN and leaving his boy in the dust here.
No, I don't think that's true, but that's funny. Now, I have to say this as we wrap this up. One thing people might not know about you, well, they might know this, but just Celtics fans, because they're seeing a lot of times just your, you know, you would see your picture in the paper or just read your columns. You were, in my opinion, fully immersed in the NBA lifestyle from a fashion standpoint. You're a very, very fashionable chap.
No.
You are a very fashionable guy. And so when I was a young pup at the Globe, they sent me out on a road trip to pinch hit for Shearer Springer. This was like 2006. The team was really bad. It was the year that Pierce was out with the foot injury. And I was on a little road trip, and Steve Bolpet took me under his wing, even though I was the competition. And you took me to, what was that shoe store in Atlanta we went to?
Friedman's Shoes, yeah.
And it's like a shoe store. I mean, these are not like any shoes. These are like Gator shoes. A lot of athletes were in there. I think when we were in there, the goaltender, whoever he was, of the Atlanta Thrashers hockey team at the time was in the shoe store at the same time. I mean, that place
it was a place that catered to athletes because it had stylish shoes of bigger sizes, right? I mean, you know, for most guys that size, if you go to a regular shoe store, they'll let you walk out with the shoe boxes on your feet, you know. But no, they had like, you know, like large. Did you have to go to the children's section?
I don't know. Oh, Steve, come on now. Come on now.
You know, that's cold.
That is cold-blooded, man. That is cold-blooded. I did not. But I will say, because no, you're right, it was athletes. I had to deal with a lesser selection due to my smaller feet. So you're not completely wrong.
Yeah. It was a place where, like I said, it wasn't like this fancy place either. Remember, it was
No.
You know,
But the guys were really nice there.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic. And I, even though I last time I was in town there, I went by just to say hello. I didn't need any. I've got so many shoes here.
But that was my next question. How many pairs of shoes from Friedman's do you think you still have?
Yeah, I don't even want to say.
Come on, Imelda Marcos. How many pairs of shoes do you have?
By the way, I used to give out the Imelda Marcos Award in notes whenever the Celtics would be playing town. And Parrish used to win it pretty regularly. I don't even want to admit it.
I know you don't.
It's embarrassing. I'll tell you this story, though.
Yeah.
They'd take care of you. You bought multiple pairs of shoes. They'd give you a break on stuff. But one time, and I've been on the beat for a couple of years, and you know how, you know, especially coming from where we did, you learn to be smart about things and, you know, not be extravagant. Anyway, I had a pair of shoes from there, and my mom was over, and she saw a shoebox, and she saw a sales slip, and it was like the sales slip was like for $104 for a pair of shoes. She looked at it and she said, "You paid $104 for a pair of shoes?" I said, "Yeah." She said, "You're doing pretty well, aren't you?" I've been doing this for like a few years. But it wasn't until she saw the price for shoes that it's
Friedman's does have a Famous Faces page on their website. Do you want me to email and ask to put you on it?
No, we got
Shaquille O'Neal. We got Kobe Bryant.
Actually, it's weird. The last time I was in there, it's gotten rough because, you know, so many more places now cater to these players and they can do things online and all this stuff
right here.
But I remember one time the Celtics went there and Parrish didn't make the trip, and you never saw. I mean, it would have been like the look on a kid's face if you told him Christmas was canceled. The people that worked there, because Chief would go into the exotic skins room, and they were hurt by that immensely. I think there were Christmas bonuses were not as big that year at Friedman's.
I have to say, well, I appreciated you taking me. It's obviously an NBA destination, and it was sort of my NBA indoctrination, you bringing me there. So I always sort of remember that. Steve, this has been great. You are a great storyteller. I knew this would be a lot of fun. I've really enjoyed it. I think we'd be remiss if we didn't mention the fact that you also hold a place in the storied history of the most storied franchise in NBA history. You, as a beat writer, followed the Celtics longer than anybody in the history of the organization, which, when you think about it, I mean, the Celtics obviously have had some of the greatest players of all time. But when you think about some of the writers who have covered the team, that also is a murderer's row. And you're right at the top as the guy who covered the team home and away as a beat writer the longest. We look forward to whatever the next step is in your career, and you're still the go-to guy for the Celtics. So thanks for dropping by the Take 5 podcast. It was a lot of fun.
Good to speak with you guys.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Take 5 podcast. We appreciate it as always. Don't forget to subscribe and rate the podcast so others can find it and enjoy it. And now you can email us at take5@wcvb.com. We'd love to get your feedback and hear your thoughts. We'll catch you next time.